Hi, this is Peter Buck of REM in the studio.
Hi, this is Michael Stipe for the best of REM in the studio, part one.
With Redbeard.
REM's beginnings are almost storybook. Guitarist Peter Buck met singer Michael Stipe in a record store in the university town of Athens, Georgia, amidst the social atmosphere of academic enlightenment, artistic freedom, and first-time adult relationships that can define American college experiences. REM was not assembled with any calculation. Instead, the additions of drummer Bill Berry and bass player singer Mike Mills completed REM's lineup as naturally as morning dew on a Georgia peach. True friendship and mutual respect has been the glue that bonded and sustained REM for almost three decades, and their refreshing approach both to music and their career elevated each to new heights in artistic integrity. The do-it-yourself philosophy that has become standard for bands in the internet age was totally revolutionary when REM and Peter Buck were recording the Chronic Town EP in Mitch Easter's garage in 1981.
We had a surprising amount of interest from major labels. But it all seemed like it took a really long time. We talked to a couple people, and it was, you know, basically it's like a year process of them meeting you, and then you play for people, and then you go to dinner with them, and then they talk to you, and then they put you in the studio to do demos. And we got to work in the RCA studios where Elvis recorded stuff in New York, I believe, and Lou Reed had done records there. And, you know, it was a pretty great experience. But it just looked like, well, it's going to take 1 year to do this. And at the time, we had a record recorded. We had Chronic Town recorded. And one of the things about IRS was that they were willing to put the record out immediately. You know, it's like, you sign the deal, we'll start pressing records. And as a matter of fact, they were pressing records before we had literally signed the document, which was kind of cool. Because we're always going, well, you know, we could just not sign it. They'll be really screwed. But I liked the immediacy of it, that we had had this piece of work done. We did it, and it seemed like a pretty nice way to enter into the business. With a record that we'd already made, no one could say, well, gee, you know, you're selling out by signing to a label, because this record was done. It was going to be on probably Murmur Records, was my guess. We probably would have called it. And so they were willing to just take us as we were. And we had a record out within 2 months or 3 months of signing. It just... My friends that were on major labels at the time in the early 80s, the business was kind of at this weird cusp of time where no one that was doing A&R seemed to understand what they were signing, and they were trying to turn what they're signing into what they'd signed in 1974. So you got a lot of kind of like punk-ish rock bands that would get totally smoothed down. There's no reason to sign a punk band if you're going to smooth them down. Beside yourself, it's Brady is gonna stay.
Stay.
The song Radio Free Europe, and REM's first full album, Murmur, is indelibly stamped in my memory, and even though they would never again use that four-on-the-floor rhythm again, the song received a respectable amount of airplay in spite of being a totally unknown band. REM lead singer Michael Stipe knew even then that the band couldn't rely on commercial radio in the long run.
Yeah, pop culture, particularly in the U.S., comes and goes, and everything moves in cycles, as things do, which we all realize as we grow older and wiser, whether it's politics or pop culture or music or what have you, people's taste,
radio.
Where we never made giant steps to make ourselves a viable hit-making American band for American radio. Radio came to us, and to my count, probably three times in 23 years. Pop culture just swung into our little stubborn trajectory, and we were in the same orbit a couple times. And so we kind of merrily went along our stubborn little route. And in doing so, American pop culture moved in a very different direction. And I think the ways, and again, we're back to distribution, the ways that people who are not music fans and go out and seek music, the way that they hear it or become aware of it is mostly through radio and television. It went off on its little path, and we went off on our little path. Our little path happened to take in a big chunk of the world, and there's a lot of people out there for whom REM didn't mean a whole lot in the 1980s.
They called the club. We'll be right back.
but REM had subscribed years earlier to a retail politics approach, says Peter Buck.
At the time, we were friends with Ian Copeland, who booked the Police. And I like the whole Ian and Miles Copeland theory of that, you know, you play anywhere for any amount of money. You don't go into debt to your record company, or you don't borrow money. You make the records you want to make, and you get in the van and you tour. And so that's just what we did. I mean, we played for $40 a night, you know, for years.
$40.
Yeah, well, or The Door, which, you know.
Couldn't be less.
Yeah. There were many an $8 night. But, you know, we never lost money on a tour. I mean, we'd always start a tour. We'd play one date in Athens so we could make like $800. You go to North Carolina, and we're kind of big in North Carolina. We'd maybe make $300. And then, you know, once you get out of that area, then we'd open for somebody. Maybe they'd give us $50 or $100 to open for Bow Wow Wow in Detroit. Or, you know, we'd play on a night that the club is usually closed, and the guy would just say, well, you can have The Door. And we'd get six people at $4 a shot. You know, I meet some of those people sometimes. Some of them I still see. And, you know, we remember shows when there was nobody there. We always have the legendary shows where nobody shows up. But, you know, somebody always shows up, and they remember it. Generally, it's like, oh, yeah, I saw you. And they'll name, you know, the Clutch Cargos in Detroit was the famous one. That was the one where everyone who showed up was on mescaline because it was a birthday party, and they're all tripping, and they saw the lights, and it looked like a good place to go. And we went, well, that's pretty cool. You know, we played a private birthday party for these people and then went out to dinner with them.
Next, Michael Stipe and Peter Buck return with new big-time producer, a fourth and then fifth album, and a top 10 hit. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and check out live REM from a 1987 Holland concert at inthestudio.net. I'm Red Beard with early best of REM.
Hi, this is Peter Buck of REM in the studio.
Hi, this is Michael Stipe for the best of REM in the studio, part one.
With Redbeard.
Thank you both. If you believe all of the fawning assertions by certain music writers, then REM's ascent to ultimate indie cred, as well as the top of the charts, rose on a graph at a 45-degree angle like a bottle rocket. Peter Buck of REM knows better.
Our career, for lack of a better word, looks so good in retrospect that it seems like it's planned out, but it certainly wasn't. I think that if you'd asked any of us in 1981 what we kind of wanted to do, we would have said, well, you know, maybe get on some small local label and put out a record a year and go to New York once a year, because that's what our friends did. You know, all our local bands, you know, put out a record that sold 7,000 copies, and you played New York and Washington, D.C. and Atlanta. And, you know, that's not a bad way to go. And then your local hometown heroes, and you play twice a month to pay the rent. And then you have a lot of time to write songs. And we were kind of hoping that we could get it to that level.
And do you think that was just being realistic? Or was there some insidious fear of it getting any bigger?
Well, I think it was realism. I mean, the early 80s was a pretty dry time as far as what was on radio and who was getting signed. And, you know, my guess was that we would never be on a major label, and I thought that'd be okay. But if you weren't on a major label, then you're not going to sell a lot of records, just almost by definition. You know, we wanted to just quit our day jobs. I mean, that was the big goal, is if we could quit our day jobs, then we're fine. I could live at whatever level that was, which would be about like $8,000 a year.
Try to turn it off.
It's important to remember that this album was conceived in the Reagan era, amidst the Iran-Contra congressional hearings and the massive welfare cutbacks in the U.S. then. The original punk rock movement of the Ramones, the Sex Pistols, the Clash, it was meant much more to be an ending rather than a beginning, a binge and purge high colonic of rock and roll. Something had to come next, and it was U2 and REM. However, there was still some post-punk hangover, as I discussed with REM lead guitarist Peter Buck in the studio.
Document particularly was kind of a chaotic look at all that. I still feel the same way, that whatever use we get out of the government is being cut back drastically so that rich people can get tax breaks and so that we can build weapons that we don't need. Look at the way they're cutting the budget now. I mean, no one has suggested that rich people should pay more taxes. I'm one of them, and I think we should. I mean, I think it's really weird. And so what they're doing is cutting, you know, the aids to dependent children funds, you know? I mean, yeah, let's have a couple kids go hungry so we can continue to manufacture bombs and planes that when we have to use them in the war don't really work. It's really weird. I just can't understand what's going on. So, you know, we do our political stuff on the side. I mean, we'd fund things because the government isn't going to do it. Well, I think it's kind of a great thing. I mean, in a way, you know, discussed with your government can turn out to be a very positive thing. You know, I mean, I think we've got a great constitution in this country. You know, no other country has what we have. I think that they're running it the wrong way. And until they see fit to take care of their citizens, then I guess a lot of us are going to have to do it. Not that I do that much. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm really a saint or anything. But lots of people who have regular jobs and don't have a lot of money, volunteer time, cash when it's possible. I think that's a very positive thing. I think you can look at the government or the way it's kind of screwing things up. And maybe if it makes people like us get a little bit more involved in the real world aspect of, you know, hunger and homelessness, then it's a good thing.
Next, Michael Stipe and Peter Buck return. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and check out live REM from a 1987 Holland concert at inthestudio.net. I'm Red Beard with Michael Stipe and Peter Buck in the studio.
Hi, this is Peter Buck of REM in the studio.
Hi, this is Michael Stipe for the best of REM in the studio, part one.
With Redbeard.
Until just a couple of years ago, it was the same four guys, and now it's the same three guys in REM. How does REM be the exception to this shortening of the cycle of so many things that you've just mentioned?
I certainly didn't think that a decision that I made at the age of 15, that I would be talking with people who were interested in hearing what I had to say about it in my early 40s, much less that I would have the fortune that I and we have had with this band.
What do you ascribe it to?
And the challenges that it's presented to me in my life, ranging from the very public to the very personal. Some brilliant, some terrifying, some life-altering, some not. But I wake up every morning thinking, well, I didn't this morning because I had to get up early to do this, but I wake up every morning thinking that I'm a very, very lucky person.
Did you never call?
South Central Rain is just one of the many fine songs on Murmur's 1984 follow-up called Reckoning. Even though REM switched producers four times with their first five albums, including John Mellencamp hit producer Don Gaiman, Those first five REM albums are sonically very consistent. REM guitarist Peter Buck says that being stubborn does have its merits.
The people at the record company tended to, they'd listen to the records and go, oh, that's a little different, or, you know, why do you want to do this? But we were, you know, we just figured that we knew what we were doing, or pretended that we knew what we were doing. A producer's role with us is kind of like, he's an arbiter when we have discussions or fights or arguments or whatever. He's supposed to capture the sounds. He's a cheerleader. He's supposed to get us excited about things. And also someone who will give us an idea that might push one of our ideas into a different dimension. But, you know, we write our own songs, and we do pretty extensive, I guess what you'd call pre-production by ourselves. So the songs are totally written and arranged, and we know have a good idea what instruments we want on it. So it's not as if things are going to be changing. I mean, the producer's job is to get us in there, capture it, you know, help us with the ideas we want to get. Frustrated a couple people, and you know, I'll say this isn't a put down in any stretch of the imagination. Don Gaiman was a great producer to work with, but he was frustrated because he felt that he was within just an inch or two of having a 10 million selling record, and that he felt that if we would follow his advice, that we could do that. And I was happy with the way the record turned out, and you know, but Don had these long discussions with us, and he was fine with it. But he had just said, well, you know, he goes, I work with other people, and you know, if I say, gee, we should do this, they'll do that. They'll rewrite the words and, you know, and cut this the solo out or whatever. And I just, we always just say, well, you know, we think that this is the way they should be.
Ascribe the longevity to?
Peter and Mike were really encyclopedic about music and musicians and the biographies of the people who they really admired as music fans, and they kind of very smartly said, if we're going to do this, these are the things that we need to know. This is what breaks up bands. This is what makes people start to suck. This is what makes people formulaic and irrelevant. And we knew that from the beginning. One of those things was releasing a greatest hits package or a live record when you've run out of things to say or when the creative juices have stopped flowing. And I can't say, in our case, certainly, this is the first time in 23 years that we've looked backward rather than forward and reflected back on what we've done. And it does, for me, provide kind of closure of REM as a four-piece. I feel that our confidence level as a trio is to the same level as that we had in our best moments as a four-piece. And so, on a personal note, I'm able to kind of close that chapter with some regret because I miss Bill Berry, although I'm very happy for him as a farmer. But close that chapter and open the next one. And I'm very interested in where the next one's going to take us.
Company on his own, where he'd rather be, where he ought to be. He sees what he can't see. Can't you see that? Maybe he's caught in the legend. Maybe he's caught in the moon. Maybe these maps and legends been misunderstood. Down the way the road is rocky. Picture the places you've seen. Those who know what I don't know refer to the yellow, red, and green. Maybe he's caught in the legend. Maybe he's caught in the moon. Maybe these maps and legends been misunderstood. Picturing all the things that you can't see, can't you see that? Maybe he's caught in the moon. Maybe these maps and legends been misunderstood. Been misunderstood. Been misunderstood. Is he to be reached? Is he to be reached? Is he not to be reached? He's to be reached.
I'm Red Beard, back in the studio after this. This is Red Beard in the studio, thanking my guests, Michael Stipe and Peter Buck. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly, Red Beard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Red Beard Rocks on Twitter, and online 24/7 at inthestudio.net.